Are you looking for food truck books to read, but you're starting to feel overwhelmed with all the content? Or maybe you're trying to find answers to your questions, but you realize you haven't asked the right questions to get those answers. Well, you're in luck. I wrote the book, Before You Launch a Food Truck, 8 Questions Every Aspiring Food Trucker Should Ask. For the past 5 years, I have been studying the food truck industry and been a diehard food truck customer. And in the process of that, I've learned a lot about what makes a good food truck stand out among the rest. I took 8 of those key concepts and created a book where I could have curbside conversations with each of you about them. What makes this book different is not only that it's digestible and designed to not overwhelm you, but it also propels you into action. You can purchase Before You Launch a Food Truck today at thefoodtruckscholar.com/shop in paperback and ebook format, as well as on Amazon. For every copy purchased, I'm donating a copy to organizations committed to helping formerly incarcerated individuals re-enter society, particularly those that are interested in starting their own food business. So, buy a copy today to help yourself and someone else get rolling and keep trucking. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Food Truck Scholar Podcast. I'm your host, Ariel D. Smith, and I appreciate you for choosing to kick it with me for yet another episode. Make sure you share your thoughts on today's episode on social media using the hashtag TFTSPodcast. Today, we're going back to the Ville, the 615. That's right, Nashville is back in the building courtesy of Chef Ray. Chef Ray is the owner of several projects, including Beyond the Fork Food Truck. Today, I learned from Chef Ray a few, remember I said that, of the projects she is working on and the importance of being a constant student and hustler as an entrepreneur, despite great obstacles. I'm sure her story is going to motivate some of you to get on your grind. But for now, sit back and relax. The show starts now. Chef Ray, thank you so much for being on the show. Could you just tell the listeners your name, the name of your food truck, and where you're based?
Hey, everybody. How you doing? I'm Chef Ray. Out of Nashville, Tennessee. The name of my food truck is Beyond the Fork, and we are, of course, mobile, so in and everywhere.
But you're in the 615.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I lived there a couple of years ago. Still so long ago now. Yeah, it was about 2 years ago when I was at Vanderbilt. So I think one of the first things I did when I went and got to Nashville was I went to a food truck festival that was in Bicentennial Park. I think like the day after I moved there. I'm excited to have somebody from New Hill on the show.
Yes, yes. I'm excited too.
I love it. We're going to talk more about the food truck in a minute. But first, I want you to take me back and tell me, like, how did you get involved with cooking? Like, where did your passion for cooking come from?
I would have to say my great-grandma taught me how to cook. She wasn't from the South. You know, she was from Washington State. But we grew up in Oakland, California. At the time, she lived in Orinda, which was a very kind of prominent neighborhood. And she would make stuff like steamed artichokes and squash and fried eggs and kind of showed me how to do those things. And she also baked with me. She made everything from scratch. And I think I took a lot of those kind of practices from her. Then I also got my first chef bag with all of my chef equipment from her when I was 5. So I guess she knew something that I didn't know. So I would have to say that I've always loved to cook, but I never thought I would actually be a chef, and I definitely didn't think I would be a chef on this level. You know, it started out as my friends kept coming over to my house trying to eat my food. And, I mean, seriously, like, this was, like, a problem. Like, I was spending double on the food. Like, you know, something's got to give. I love y'all, but you're not paying for this, and you're not even bringing, you know, a piece of meat to put on a grill. So I started Race Cuisine because I got tired of feeding everybody, but then I also realized people really love my food. And so I started the catering company. And that's how it all began. It was literally after they came over, we had a big brunch, and I just realized that maybe I can turn this into something. And that was 2012. It if not before then, when I kind of started representing a personal chef service. And we started out on Groupon doing meal plans. So yeah, come a long way.
So this all started because it was eating up your groceries.
I mean, seriously, like, I'm talking about, I can name them, but you know, we're not going to put them out there like that. I said, it was at least, it was at least four or five of them. Y'all know who y'all is. We used to work together. But I love you, you know. But, and I really do appreciate all the times you ate my food for free because, you know, you put me here. You put me here. And I appreciate that. I really do. You gave me motivation.
It's amazing how things in our lives that we have, we think are kind of small. Now, that's low-key major because that's finances and food right there. But the thing that we never know what they may lead to. Like, I talk to people all the time and say, you know, I was just making plates to pay my rent or right. I was just doing this as a side hustle and never once thought that this would be something that people would be paying for at the level that I'm at now, you know. So I'm always into hearing those stories. Now, your great-grandma, she put a chef bag in your hand. Did you have any other exposure to, like, cooking or entrepreneurship?
Oh, yeah. So my dad was from Omaha, Nebraska. We all, you know, grew up in California, but he was born and raised in Omaha, Nebraska. His mom was from Oklahoma City. And my mom's dad was from Oxford, Mississippi. So I kind of got basically a lot of Southern type of, you know, cooking from everybody. Everyone kind of showed me how to cook. But then my mom, she actually was Hispanic. And so she taught me how to make tamales and enchiladas. I mean, hours sitting at the table pulling chicken, you know, and I kind of learned how to do pies with her. And so I kind of took everybody, I guess, you know, teaching. My dad was more of a, like, a Southern cook. He liked, you know, red beans and rice, spaghetti, stuff like that, fried fish. And my mom was more of California Mexican fresh. And then my grandma was more of just straight up, you know, peach cobbler, collard greens. And so I kind of combined all of those things together. I actually feel like I had a serious weight problem growing up. And so I took what I learned how to cook and to turn it into something healthier, using healthier ingredients, but making the same exact dish. And so I think that's kind of how it really pushed me to see whether or not I wanted to be a chef, and if cooking was really my thing.
And so when did you start playing with the different ingredients?
I would have to say that I have been cooking. I started learning when I was around three, and I would get on, like, the actual chair in the kitchen, and my grandma would show me. But I would have to say that when I had two little brothers, and there's about a nine-year age difference between me and the youngest one, and so I would have to cook for them, you know. So around, like, 7 or 8 years old, hey, we were kind of raising ourselves, you know, somewhat like latchkey kids. And the very first thing I ever tried to make them was burn down the house. I'll never forget. And you know what's crazy? They invented something for it. I said, they stole my idea. And I don't know how to go ahead and get this money. But I tried to make a grilled cheese sandwich and I stuck it in the toaster. Don't ask me why.
No.
Okay. It had no butter on it.
I'm not going to judge you because there was something I did when I was five. I love popcorn. I love popcorn. And so we had, like, the air popper, and my uncle would pop it for me. And so we put it in, like, this wooden bowl. I had, like, this one little wooden bowl of my favorite bowl to carry stuff in, especially with popcorn. It was the popcorn bowl for me. You didn't put nothing else in my bowl. I'm very territorial. It was my bowl. And so one day I had popcorn, but the popcorn had gotten cold. And so I thought if I stuck it in the microwave to heat up my popcorn, it would be okay. I put a wooden bowl in.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah,
did it catch on fire?
That went exactly how you thought it would. So, like, smoke coming out the back. And then, like, my great grandma, but they still had that bowl, and there's, like, a little black mark at the bottom where flames came out from the bottom.
Oh, my God.
So, you will find no judgment And I said, you've had a mishap and you're on the food truck style of podcast. Trust me, I will not judge you. You are in a judge-free zone.
Well, I didn't have, that great of an experience with my dressing and culture because my mom was sitting outside on the deck and she said, what's that smell? She came in the house and she immediately unplugged it, took it out. Of course, I got whooped for that. She was like, you never can do that again. But after that, I said, maybe I'm not that great at this, but let me try something else. So I started making omelets, and that was my thing, omelets, breakfast. And it was the easiest thing to do, and then, that's kind of how I advanced. When I graduated high school, I joined Bay Area Garden Corporation, and we built a one-acre garden. We, planted everything. We literally picked everything, and we would invite the kids to come by, and we would show them how to, plant and how to pull, and then also how to cook with the ingredients. And so that's how I kind of ended up here, and the ideas that I have now kind of stem from my childhood of, one, I don't know how to really cook. It kind of showed me a little bit, but not enough. And then, two, I had this experience over at this garden, and I really do believe and advocate in growing what you eat. And so that's how I started.
That is amazing.
So talk to me about the food truck process. So what made you decide, I'm going to go the food truck route?
Man, honestly, I have wanted a food truck for a while because I did a business plan in culinary school that showed the breakdown of what it costs to own a restaurant. And it was like, first of all, you have to have wages for 2 years. And most people don't know that or even think about that. Like, yes, you have the money for your building. Maybe. Maybe you'll lease it. Maybe it's already turnkey. But now you have to fill it with equipment. And maybe it already has it and maybe it doesn't. But you're already over, $100,000. Let's just say, hypothetically, six figures for a restaurant. And so even at the cheapest Mexican menu that I created, my restaurant ideas are still over $500,000. Then, you have to calculate 2 years of wages. So with the food truck, for me, the expenses were dramatically lower. I realized that I could take my, dream and ideas on the road and that people can kind of, everyone can get a taste of my food rather than just me being in one location. You have to travel to Nashville and, all of that. And then with just me just having so much family around the U.S. and so many friends and traveling a lot, I figured food truck would be perfect for me, because especially if I decided to do a festival somewhere else or, someone I knew, or I decided to vacation somewhere for a couple of weeks, then I got my food truck. So that's kind of how that started. Someone just invested in me and really, encouraged me and told me that that was something that they felt like I would be successful in doing. I thought about it, but I never really thought about it, until it became real. 30 days before I had to fly to Florida and drive this food truck from Florida to Atlanta, through Chattanooga to Nashville.
Ooh.
I felt so, on that journey.
Yeah, a journey, And it didn't have no car charger. So, I didn't know anything about that. If I could say anything, any piece of little bit of advice, if you ever buy a food truck, ask them, does it have a car charger? And if it doesn't, go to Walmart or somewhere and get you one of those portable voltage packs over there in the battery section. And no one ever told me this, okay? And so I stopped at every gas station just about on I-75, because this is right when the flood happened in North Carolina, so you couldn't take 95. And if you didn't know how to drive, you were going to end up on 95 and get turned back around because it was shut down and flooded. You had to get off and get back on the exact same highway every single time.
Wow.
Yeah. What a journey.
How many hours was that?
Oh, my God. So what was supposed to be probably not even a 10-hour drive from Florida, I flew to Panama City Beach. Fort Lauderdale, I want to say. And it was supposed to be 10 hours, but it took me more 16 just to get to Atlanta. So I had a hotel booked it was supposed to be one night so I could drive from Atlanta and then back to Nashville, take a day of rest. I didn't even make it to the hotel check-in. I made it the following day at hotel check-in, if that gives you an idea how long it took.
Whoa.
Because when I first got the food truck, I flew down to Florida, and the guy was really, really nice. Actually, I bought my food truck off eBay. And this is the crazy thing, because I tell people this all the time, like, you know, you can buy cars on eBay, all sorts of stuff. I didn't do the money transfer via eBay, but I found it via eBay. And I flew down there, met him at, like, this storage facility, and I only got maybe 2 blocks up the road and it broke.
Wow.
I'm like, okay. So I'm sitting on the side of the expressway trying to get on to, I want to say it had to have been, you know, 75. And I'm sitting there for hours, at least 3 hours before a tow truck came for the guy that I bought the food truck from came back to get me. And I had to then take it to the shop, and they had like a battery saver on the battery, so it broke off and it literally shut down everything. You know, so I had to wait till that got fixed. So by that time, it was afternoon. So my idea is, hey, I'm finding early first flight out, and then I'm going to leave straight from there and go straight to Atlanta. I should be able, you know, be okay. It took me twice as long because I didn't leave Florida until like 3 or 4 p.m. In addition to that, I was on the side of the road, you know, literally on the floor of my food truck in the front seat. And I will never forget, because people kept honking for me to move. I can't move. So, you know, and despite popular belief, there's no flashers on my food truck. So, I mean, it wasn't like I could turn on flashers, and obviously I wasn't just sitting there, you know. But
that was going to be the next thing I was going to ask.
Mm-hmm. It was, when I say, I never forget I was on the bottom of that food truck eating a, almost similar to a Puerto Rican quesito, like a pastry with guava jelly in it. And I only remember this very distinctly because I had went to a spot inside of the airport. So I was just, I guess it's just going to keep honking, you know, nothing I can do.
And that brings up a good thing, because I've never seen a food truck with their hazard lights on, and now I realize because they don't have it.
Not that I know of. Look, I looked for them. I said, I looked under everything. But, yeah, so that's what happened to me.
I was just assuming that every vehicle would have it.
Mhm. I thought so too. Just like car charger thing, you know, I wasn't thinking, because this used to be this used to be an old Aramark van, so you know, I just assumed that they would have flashes for their vehicles when they're hauling off uniforms, you know.
I would think so too. But. See, now I'm going to deal with this when it's all said and done. I'm like,
I know, right? You're going to have to write a whole paper on where are the flashes on T-shirts.
But really, though. I might call it, what are those? Oh, they're not there. I might have. So, beyond the challenge of it breaking down when you first got it, what have been some of the challenges of being a food truck owner or starting your food truck business?
Honestly, just opening, because when we set like a 3-month launch time and then we get into the truck to go get our permits and it doesn't go and drive. So it's really just for us just been getting it to start and, you know, going from there pretty much is finding a good mobile mechanic. But our truck is renovated, just fully stocked, you know. It already had the wrap on it because the guy that had it before never actually did anything with it. So it was already wrapped, so we're going to keep that temporarily. And it just went with our concept, because there's a bunch of superheroes all over our truck. So, we're like beyond the fort, you know. And so that's kind of how we came up with that name, myself and my partner Jeremy.
Yeah.
That's been the biggest challenge, honestly. I mean, everything else was pretty easy. You know, obtaining insurance and things like that, creating a menu. We even got on Uber Eats, you know, for delivery. So, most people don't know that you can actually do delivery on a food truck. You know, you just update your address. So that's kind of neat. And we were even able to get a restaurant POS system put in there so I can really monitor my truck. I'd say any piece of advice to anybody, don't use PayPal, don't use Square. Oh, that's great. That's fine and dandy. But like the first week or two, that's fine. I mean, I could track mine real good because I have a business account. And so I get automatic notifications when anything is deposited, taken out, anything. But, and I can see what it's from. And then, you know, you have PayPal here, which is like where you can set up your menu and you can do a little card reader. That's awesome too. That's great. But for the people that are just doing like the cheapest, easiest transaction type of, you know, record recording, stuff like that, I wouldn't do that personally. But what I would recommend is Touch Bistro. It is amazing. It's integrated with PayPal. I think they even have integration set up for Uber Eats, for Square even. And it allows me to even put an anti-theft system onto my POS. So I don't even have to be there. I could tell if you're stealing. I don't even have to have a camera on you. I could tell based on the reporting. And it even does your profit and loss statements each month, which I recommend. So before I actually became a food truck owner, I was in sales. And so I worked for everybody you could think of, the biggest of each company with cell phone, shipping, sales, literally the top of the food chain. I won't name them, but the top of the food chain of each company in those areas I worked for. Worked in corporate for 10 years. I graduated high school in 3 years. I graduated college in 3 years. And then I went on to obtain my master's in HR management. So I kind of know the business side of everything before I really got into it. And I do think that that's important too, is understanding business, understanding contracts, understanding how to set up certain things to make life more efficient. I can't keep up with it all without that, without, you know, efficiency or SOPs in place. So yeah, that's kind of my biggest piece of advice. Definitely get you a good point of sale system. We are using an iPad, but the Touch Bistro system is literally embedded into the iPad. I can update my menu. I can print out receipts, all sorts of stuff. So it's kind of nice.
And you say it's called Touch Bistro?
Mm-hmm.
How about it, y'all? We talked about how you guys came up with the name Beyond the Fork. The way I connected with you was actually someone followed you. They're a friend of mine. And they tagged me. And I think it was the photo, the post that you had made on Instagram when you first got the truck. And they attacked me in it. And so I celebrate anytime I see someone become a business owner. And then I started following you a little bit more. I started realizing that you were doing stuff, you know, in the community, which is what I definitely love to see, is not only when people become business owners and entrepreneurs, but when they use that as a platform to give back. Can you talk a little bit more about the work that you've been doing in Nashville?
Oh, yeah. So I started this program, at Knowledge Academy, originally. And how it all started was I actually went to culinary school and graduated in 2015 with my diploma. This was after grad school. And then I said, I want to teach. But how do I do that? Because I can't teach in my master's. I mean, you can, but not too many people offer HR classes. And I can't teach in my English because, well, my English degree, because you have to have a master's in, you have to have at least 18 credit hours in the subject you're teaching in that degree, right? So I said, well, I'm teaching culinary classes going on 5 years now, all over the city. I teach them at businesses. I have like a contract with 9 apartment complexes. I even had a contract at first with Whole Foods. And so I'd go around the city and I just teach cooking classes, and I even do them, you know, with kids and adults. And then I was like, I really love this. Like, you know, I run the classes the way I want. I create the menus. I don't really repeat menus. Average of like 15 to 20 people. And then I wanted to get my license to teach, to do K through 12, because with college level culinary, you don't have to. You could teach that with just like a regular culinary certification. So got my teaching license. That was last year. Graduated. I only had to take 2 classes to get an associate's in culinary. The 2 classes I was missing, bumped my degree up. Got the license. So now I have a license as an occupational practitioner, teach culinary. And when I got that, I started really looking into working in a school capacity. And Knowledge Academies had just purchased a building that used to be part of Burger 360, which was a company that, you know, literally just did burgers and fries, kind of like quick bites, and they were literally right on the end of the school's property. My hairdresser was on the other end, so I was always solving. And when they cleared out, they left a really good space, left all their equipment behind, you know, so we were going to take that room and turn it into where they can buy meal, prepared meals, already prepackaged. The kids can run it like a restaurant, and I can teach them front of house, back of house, and literally let them run it in groups. And that was going to be the beginning of the culinary program. And then during that kind of, I guess, you know, discovery of what I was going to do at KA, I was like, well, we should do a grocery program, you know, something to give back to the community, allow people to eat healthier food options and more affordable. And so we created Nashville Stop Chefs. And that was going to be kind of supposed to be for the kids. once we started it, once school started back up in August of this year, we were going to take Nashville's Top Chefs and run it as the beginning of the culinary program, teaching them, one, how to buy food, how to package it, literally how to commercialize the boxes we were giving out, and how to make it part of the curriculum. And one of the guys there was running an agricultural outdoor learning program. Now him and I work together. And so he's at a different high school. I just got hired at a different high school. And so we're going to basically join our programs together, seeing as there's no other culinary teacher on the head of the department. So we're going to join those two schools together, and he's going to basically run ag. And so through our nonprofit Community Fresh Foundation, no longer Nashville's Top Chef, is a subsidiary of GRITS, which is a nonprofit called Growing Resilience in the South. And they primarily focus on health education type of things like that. You know, like one of the ladies that is over that, she's a registered dietitian. So her primary focus is nutrition. My primary focus and Jay's primary focus is agricultural and culinary learning and how we can combine those two together. And so now we're all one group and trying to build a partnership with Delmont to create this program and also create a kind of like a college-bound program for Belmont. So that's kind of what I'm working on. That's kind of how it started, was attending KA, you know, unfortunately it was under false pretenses, but, you know, this, the greatness that came out of it was the idea, right? And so now I've taken this idea and it's my idea. Like, it's no longer, I don't have to really share it anymore. You know, it's just a group of four of us and we have a board and it's amazing and there's no drama. We track our expenses, you know, we use the money what we're supposed to use it for. And it's an amazing thing when it works. And so now, like, the food truck, because the food truck sat for almost, it's been like a year, almost a year, come September. And during that time, I really built the nonprofit and really focused on that and really focused on flourishing the idea. And I was like, well, how can I make this food truck work for what I'm doing, you know, rather than it just be for profit? Because that's really not the goal. The goal was to have my own establishment, but as far as how I was going to take it and to what extent, that I feel like developed through the relationship that I built with Knowledge Academy. And so I wanted to create an externship program, almost like a culinary academy, almost like an apprenticeship where, you know, hands-on learning, which would technically fall under Culinary 4 per the state, is the hands-on learning piece. And so I wanted to build an externship program with my food truck. So despite all the drama that happened over there, when my name and business idea was put on a grant application, I said, okay, now I have to go. I have to go pitch for this money and try to get this money and at least, you know, somehow make it all pull together. And so I flew to California for the second time. That was in May, for an event, Tony Romby and Rock Social Societal Award event in San Francisco through Teach for America. And I went down there and we pitched. And it was for $100,000. We didn't get the $100,000, but we did get $5,000. And when I tell you, like, hey, you know, I believe, you know, I don't want to offend anybody, but I do believe in God. And I feel like everything works out for, you know, it's true purpose. And with me teaching and having one, we asked for an activity bus. We did not get the $100,000, so we couldn't buy the activity bus, right? But with me teaching, we have an activity bus in my school. They don't have an agricultural program. So now they do. Because I'm going to give it to them. They didn't have the money for the program, but now we got the $5,000 to literally create our cash crop to continue putting that into the program. So now they have the land that were donated to us through our nonprofit. And so in turn, I'm able to use that to build the agricultural program that never even existed and to utilize my resources to make it grow into something bigger than what it ever was going to be anyway. So honestly, it kind of worked out together. You know, like, now I could teach. And all the things that I've ever wanted to do, I can let the kids do them. Like, I wanted to do a pop-up dinner club. Now that pop-up dinner club is going to be our fundraiser for the culinary department. You know, and these meals that we were doing at Knowledge Academy, those meals are now going to fundraise. So I could take my students out of the country and take them on trips and do just straight food trips, you know, things like that. Now the money that I'm going to use on my food truck is going to allow me to take those kids to festivals and events and give them exposure that they never thought that they could, that they would ever see, you know. So at the end of the day, like, you know, I'm winning regardless. And now I can share that with over 180 kids that belong just to my program,
because my program is completely filled up at Antioch High School.
When I tell you, like, blown away, it doesn't even really describe it. Simply because I'm excited, simply because I came alive in college when I had an opportunity to do something hands-on. Like, I remember how I kept disconnected a lot of times in high school and even a lot of times during my college career because I couldn't figure out how the stuff I was learning in class was relevant to me.
Mm-hmm.
And when I found something that was connected to me, I came alive. I had a whole career change just because I felt I didn't fit in that degree anymore. And I realized, okay, this program that I'm in is in the business school, but none of the classes I'm going to take after that is going to be like this. So I got to find something that needs to be more like this.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I see people who are taking the time, the effort, the resources, the talent they take to put together programs so that, you know, children, kids all over can have those kind of experiences, I get excited and I get grateful because it's moments like that where you ignite something for a child.
Right.
Where learning becomes tangible and it's relatable and they get a chance to not just sit in a desk and have you throw information at them, but they actually get to create it.
Mm-hmm. So, not to interrupt you, but just to add to that, a lot of people don't know my background. And so I grew up in Oakland, California. If you've ever seen Coach Carter, have you seen that movie?
Yes.
That was my neighborhood. I lived not even a couple of blocks from that store where they were shooting at in the movie.
Wow.
You know, that was Richmond. So I've lived in, you know, some of the roughest neighborhoods, but I grew up in Oakland. I went to school in Pittsburgh, which is like 30 miles away, so that I can be in a better environment. And I stayed with my dad. My dad raised me where I went with my mom on the weekend. You know, so it was a completely different way of life. When I was with my dad, I read my textbook front to back. Because I knew that that was my way out by education. That's how I got my, you know, my exit. And a safe one, you know? And so I figured out that I could graduate a year early. So I went and I did every summer school program for 6 years. It took me 6 years to graduate 1 year early, to get enough credits to graduate 1 year early. So graduated 1 year early. I was the first person to do it in 34 years. I walked the stage with my brother, who was not my twin. And so we were the first non-twin siblings to walk the stage together in 34 years. And I was the first person to graduate a year early in 34 years. So just to kind of give you, you know, I didn't know how to read until I was like 11. And
wow.
I think that changed not knowing how to read. You know, when you got parents that they're there, but they're not there. Like I was raised by my mom until I was like 8. And I'm just going to be honest. She was not hands-on with me, you know. So I think that having that experience and then really finding my purpose, like I feel like I really found my purpose when it came to food, but it was more so like, okay, I want to be a chef, but to what extent I did not know. And it was not revealed to me. I feel like it wasn't revealed to me until the event happened. So I started working at Knowledge Academy. During that time, I was like, okay, after, you know, I was getting roadblocks for what I wanted to do. I just still kept it in my mind that one day these were the things that I wanted to do for kids, to give back, to give them a better opportunity, like to give them the exposure, to really be a teacher that cares, that really comes in every day and inspires the classroom rather than, you know, pushing them away, deterring them. I had teachers tell me I was never going to be anything, and I remember them by name. Like, I remember the principal that I dealt with, who asked my dad to whoop me when I was a kid. You know, he's still over at the school district over in California. I won't say his name, but he knows who he is. And, you know, I had so many people tell me I was never going to be anything because I could not read. And, I mean, that was a real thing for me. Like, I was on Hooked on Phonics. Hooked on Phonics did nothing for me. I could joke about it now, but Hooked on Phonics did nothing for me, okay? My mother called Hooked on Phonics, that 1-800 number. She said, can I get my money back? I kid you not. She got her money back. She got a refund.
Like, I remember her so funny too.
She got a refund. Look, let me tell you, that thing came in a big old box about,
yep,
you know, I mean, it came with a big old box that had cassette tapes up in it. It had books in it. It was just like everything you needed. They said, oh, you can read? Yeah.
I don't even know if they still do hit on fights, but I remember.
They probably do. We need to Google it and just see. But I say that to say that's how I became, I feel like I really started to build in my mind I was going to be a teacher, but I was going to be way more than a teacher. Just, I wanted the same opportunities that I'm giving these people, given to me, and they weren't, you know. I was actually robbed of a lot of opportunities, and so now I want to give kids the same opportunities that they deserve. Like, you're in a culinary program, but all y'all do is make sandwiches and salad for culinary one. We won't be doing that. So what I've decided to do, not only has this developed into this big idea for me, but I've also decided to build curriculum. So I'm building a standard curriculum for culinary one, two, and three. The only difference is the recipes, and culinary one, two will take some of the tests that culinary three students will take, so they're prepared. But it's not going to be any different. That way they're all on the same page. And that's what I plan to do, is standardize curriculum in the Nashville School District, and that is part of the problem. Kids not learning, kids not understanding, because they're learning at a different pace on a different level. Why can't we all be on the same page?
I gotta ask. Unfortunately, oftentimes in our school system, we have professors, we have teachers, and we have guidance. Like, I'm thinking about in my high school, we had a college counselor that told someone that I knew they should have went to community college. They ended up graduating from a 4-year university. It's just,
oh wow.
Like, but you know, like, I'm thinking about things of that nature. I'm thinking about people that just haven't been the support that children need when they need it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you didn't learn how to read until you were 11. So who invested into you to help you get to that stuff?
Honestly, after that Hooked on Phonics conversation, which was really my mom cussing Hooked on Phonics out to get her money back. After that situation, I said, you ain't got to ever worry about me again. I mean, that one incident changed my whole life. From that day forward, I learned how to do everything that someone told me I never could do by myself. So I had this bookshelf, and it was in my room, and I'll never forget it, rotated. And I went and I read them books, like front to back, learned how to read them, and I taught myself how to read. Honestly, that's really what happened. After that situation, and she was pissed, like I did it, okay? So I went and I said, I'm gonna teach myself how to read. And, you know, I taught myself how to tie my shoes, taught myself how to, you know, get up and do what I have to do, and I was taking care of my little brothers at the time. And so I just became really independent. And I think that's why I am the way that I am. Like, people say me all the time, you're a workaholic, when do you sleep? I honestly don't really think about sleep. I think about never being in that situation again, to where I would even have to figure out how to learn how to read, right? Like, you can take that whole concept and you can adapt it to anything. Like, I took that concept and was like, I never want to be in a position where I have to ask somebody, basically beg them, to teach me how to do something. So I learned how to do it on my own. And I was a professional student. I mean, professional to the extent. I've been in college since I was 13 years old. I have transcripts from when I was in high school, and I mean legitimate college. And so from that day forward, I used education as my tool. One, it was my way to get out of the house early. Two, I knew that I could get a scholarship, and, you know, I just really knew that I can learn everything that I need to learn through education. And that's really what happened. I went to school and just kept going. And no one could tell me anything. And from that point forward, like, I mean, even to this day, you know, I do a lot of random things that have nothing to do with food. And it's because I refuse to ask somebody. I just go look it up and I figure it out.
And in many ways, I can empathize with that, because I didn't learn how to drive until late. Because I was raised by my great aunt, and I love her to death, love her to life. But at the same time, she was very controlling and very overprotective. So she didn't want me going anywhere without her knowing it. And one way of doing that is making sure that you don't know how to drive.
Right.
So that was one of the things. And so when I got to college, that was my number one thing. Like, I got to figure out how to drive. I got to figure out how to drive. But, you know, yeah, you got some friends that will help you, but at the same time, that's not their responsibility. So it's like, whenever they got time and they feel like doing it, then, yeah.
And, you know, I'm thankful for all of my friends who did, you know, pick me up and take me to different places. But at the same time, it got real frustrating. It's like, okay, I got to be at this place. So I got to figure out, okay, is the bus running this time? And this was like before Uber and Lyft took off and stuff like that. And you got to ask them. And then they're like, oh, I'm running late. Or, well, I got to be at this time. It's like all those type of things get real aggravated. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I got to figure out whatever it is I got to do. So I went through that. All of college, I got my permit, I failed my driver's license test the first time I took it. And then, and I got, for a moment I got discouraged on that, and I was like, okay, well, you know, you just need practice, because I hadn't had much practice, but that was all it really was. And so, before I got ready to move to Birmingham, I was talking to a friend of mine, who, in many ways, is kind of like an auntie figure to me, in many ways, how she looked out for me like an older sister in a lot of ways. And so, we worked together for 3 days, and I passed.
Oh, wow.
It was like 3 days. Yeah, 3-4 days. The first time we took it, I passed. I only failed it because I stopped at the stop sign the way she told me to. And they're like, well, you got to stop before the stop sign. And they're like, no, you got to stop. Then you got to roll up and look both ways and then go. And she was like, yes, but okay, let's take a test again. And then I passed it on that stuff. But since then, because of that feeling, and when I called home, I had my license, but I still didn't have money for a car. So I was working 5 and 6, no plan, like 5 and 6 jobs, and I was even doing my master's degree at Vanderbilt to stay afloat, to pay the tuition, so I could, you know, pay my bill, all that type of stuff. And I had professors that weren't even my professors. They just knew me, walk up to me when I was petitioning to get financial aid because I was done with my classes. I had one class left. I had gotten to Purdue. Like, I was about to be gone. But I had an $800 balance I couldn't pay. I did everything. And she walked up to me and was like, well, you know, you got to work more for it. I'm like, you passed by me when you saw me walk. Like,
wow.
No. And you coming to my face, telling me that, you know, I haven't done all I need to be doing. When I was an intern at KIPP, so I would get up early in the morning, take an Uber, get over there, work from 7 to 3, leave there, go to class at 4:30 to 7:20, then have my other job on Mondays and Wednesdays, then go to class all the other days and go to my other job as well. Now don't tell me that I'm not doing everything that I can.
Right.
But it was moments like that where I said, you know, when I do get to something I need, I'm never going to be in this position again where I have to beg people for funding, or I have to ask people, can they take me here, or can they take me there, or can they do this for me? At best, what I'm going to do is watch how you did it. I might ask you how you did it or what resources you bought if I can't figure it out. But once I get that information, it's go time, and I'm going to figure out how to make my way because of stuff like that. So I feel you.
Yeah, I mean, I really do thank God for the experiences, though.
I could have had life a little bit easier. We all could have, right? But I am really thankful for the experiences because now I feel like, you know, we all want to toot our own horn. But can't nobody tell me nothing. You know, you could tell me how to do something and things like I'll listen, I'll receive it well and all that. But, I mean, I'm 31 years old with 4 degrees, you know, and with a nonprofit and a food truck and a private chef business. And I did it with $5 to my name. And so I want to take that knowledge and I want to show how to do it.
We got to bag it up. You got how many degrees now?
I got 4.
And you got how many nonprofits now?
I got 1 nonprofit and technically I'm a subsidiary. I'm a subsidiary of the nonprofit. Community Fresh Foundations is incorporated by GRIT. So technically it's 2 separate, you know, organizations operating under 1. And then Ray's Cuisine is still operating too. I'm still a private chef. I still cook in people's homes. I'm also a Walmart chef. Your girl got her first official corporate contract. So I'm a Walmart chef, through Real Food Championships. And I'm 8th in the world. Like, I never saw that coming. And I teach, privately, group. I'm about to actually getting ready for a cooking class right now.
and you 31 and you did this all with how much is your name?
No lie, I didn't have any money to start my business. I got a tax ID for free, business license costing 15. I didn't have to get the business license right away until I made $3,000. So I started my business basically with $5 in my name. You know, opened up my bank account. I don't even know what I deposited up in there, but I opened up my bank account and got my EIN for free. Pretty much got my documents for less than 20. So, you know, I didn't really start with any money. I say maybe $500. You know, after, but that took me a while, right? Like, once I got that money, then I got uniforms and equipment. Then later on, I got a job. I won't say their name, but I was a sales rep for one of the top industrial supply companies. And I always had a full-time job in conjunction with being a private chef. So I would take my money from my jobs and I would funnel it through my business so that I can, you know, get what I needed. And so, I was a sales rep and I was a beast. I sold $1.1+ million a year in industrial supply, and I used that money to basically get my supplies, and I used my discount to get my catering cabinets and to get my equipment, and then I used my company vehicle. Hey, I don't work for y'all no more, so I don't care no more. I used my company vehicle to get to my catering events, and I didn't pay for gas for 3 years while I worked there. So, you know, I had to do what I had to do, and that's how I did it. That's how I started Raised Cuisine, literally. I was catering, and I was using my company vehicle as my van, okay? It was a Jeep. I'll never forget. But I got a brand new straight off the lot. I even signed a check to get the truck. If it wasn't for that, I don't know. I don't know where I would be. But that's exactly what I did. I used that company vehicle to get from A to B and from B to C and D to E. I mean, in and out of state. And did what I had to do. And then while I was a student, I had teachers who really supported me, and that's another reason, too, why I wanted to be a teacher. I'm like, these teachers, they love me. But what I didn't want them to know was, one, I had a higher degree than they had. You know, I got my master's when this was probably 6 years ago. So I think I was like 23, 24 when I graduated my master's. Yeah. And I'm in culinary school, and my teachers barely have a bachelor's. And when they found out, they was like, why you didn't tell us? Because I didn't want you to know. Because the way that people receive you and treat you, it's, to me, it's not just paper. Some people it's just paper. But I sweated for that degree. You know, like I'm talking about, I had multiple jobs. And this job that I'm talking about with the sales job, I had 350 accounts that was all up to $500,000 worth of sales. And I had to increase them sales. I was traveling in and out of state for work. And I was running this business anywhere I could. If I was in Atlanta, I had a client. If I was over, I had a client, and that's how I marketed myself. So it's just crazy when you think about it, like, man, what will we do with the companies that pushed us out, the managers that, you know, turned their heads and really just made us not want to work there? Where would I be if it wasn't for all of the bad managers that I had in my lifetime? But what I'm doing is I'm utilizing anything that happened to me, and I'm turning that into something that to speak to others, because now I'm writing this book that has to do with the exact conversation we're having about clients and about just different experiences, about being a black female, running a business, period, you know, doing this in this industry. And so it's called I'm Just the Help. And so I'm writing that right now. And there's several chapters about my different employers. Of course, I don't use their names, but I do funny titles and stuff. And so hopefully, you know, 2020, I'll announce a date for that. But it's just inspired me to do a lot more. Like, I wanted to get into public speaking, and, you know, this experience with Knowledge Academy is just, it's giving me that platform. It's giving me the connections I want, and people are helping me left and right because of what happened.
When that book come out, let me know,
I definitely will.
Come back on this show, talk about it, promote it.
I definitely will. I actually have an introduction I can read to you. And tell you some of the titles of my chapters if you want to know. So my introduction is, this book is about my life, how I got to this point in my career, and all of the obstacles I've encountered. It's about my struggles, times where I felt defeated, lessons I've learned, and about how I began to define myself through being a private chef. It's about what I will and will not tolerate. Real stories told from real kitchens unfolded on napkins, beneath plates, over dinner plates to rake.
That line though. So
I'm excited about this one chapter I'm writing about. It's called, I might change the name of it, but right now it's called Chocolate Swirl, Vanilla Whirl, and Anything in the Middle Will Make Me Hurl. This is about my client who told me I was 60% black and 40% white, and that I wasn't like the rest.
but she didn't mean literally.
You know, I ain't never had someone break it down like a fraction like that to me, but I had it. I ain't never had it like that. But I've had it like for, you're not like the others. Who are the others?
Right.
What you mean?
Right.
The
final. The last one. I'm excited about that one. I have a whole chapter in here about my mom. It's called Umbilical Cord, spelled capital B-I-L-L. And it's just about having children and how that can be seen as a curse or as a blessing. This chapter is actually about me being abandoned by my mother and the day I decided I got rid of my umbilical cord. So that's like my deepest chapter. That's going to be the one right before the conclusion. So I'm excited. You know, I've been working. I got an outline and everything about all my chapters and how I'm going to write them. So I've just been working in between my 50 million jobs. I got a seasoning line called Hella Season. Don't be salty, get seasoned. You can order it at chefbreadcooks.com.
Wait a minute. Say it again.
It's called Hella Season. Don't be salty, get seasoned. It's a Cajun Mexican seasoning. You can purchase it at www.chefbreadcooks.com.
I got it. Just so I can take the pictures so they can say, don't.
And it is good. It's an all-purpose season. It's all putting on everything, literally.
Don't ask me why. I love adding Creole seasoning to my baked potatoes.
I understand. I completely understand. So my family, a lot of my family's from New Orleans, so, you know, I tell people I'm Creole. Cause really that's what I am. Like my grandpa was a full-blooded French, black French, and my grandma was Choctaw Indian. So yeah, that's kind of like my history, and that's kind of how I started. Especially with the seasoning, that's pretty much, I love Creole seasoning, I love Creole food. That's actually one of my favorite things to cook, is Cajun Creole food.
Anything else you got up your sleeve? We got a book, we got seasoning, we got the truck, we got the program, we got the curriculum, Walmart shelf.
Man, Walmart was the biggest one though. Like, when I said, I'm actually kind of shocked, so I made it out of 24 people around the United States to be part of the Real Food Championships Recipe Champ Demo Club. So we go, you know, you see the people in Walmart, and they give out samples. It's honestly, we talking about them. Y'all better stop. Y'all better stop, and contracts is good. Good.
I don't see them often in Walmart here. I see them mostly in, like, Sam's Club.
Mm-hmm. Which is owned by Walmart.
Yep. But mm-hmm. I look forward to them every Saturday. I'm like, you know what? This is my time to shine. Be rolling through there. I be getting all different types of stuff. I am that person that rolled by. He's like, didn't I see you earlier?
So this will be a neighborhood Walmart, not the actual Walmart. So I have a designated store. Right. And those actually are smaller, a little bit more intimate, you know, and you get a little bit more foot traffic. But we basically go over the recipe with you, demo it. We scan a QR code to your phone. You get the recipe right on your phone. Then we give you the samples and everything. We'll show you what aisles you can get everything on based on the recipe. Like, it's way different. They were using a different company prior to that, Advantico, I want to say, and they still do it. But now we're just on our own, though. Like, us 24 people are separated now from Advantico. I think that was the name of the company.
Let me find out.
So, y'all, don't be calling me asking for no money. I'm trying to work on that.
I ain't calling you for that, but I will be calling you for plates.
Look, I'm talking about these people listening. Don't be calling me and telling me to get $5. Look, we ain't there yet, but when I do get there, everybody gonna get $5.
My hand up to receive that $5 right now.
Right.
Appreciate it.
Right.
$5 is going my way on certain days.
I'm telling you, right? I still hustle and still drive Uber. Like, when I say I do not stop, if y'all don't start having a second and third income, Uber is the business. That's what we need to talk about one day. Uber.
When I first drove my car, I drove Uber and Lyft. Up here, it's kind of crazy a little bit because you got Uber and Lyft drivers, but it's just a different style. It's interesting up here in West Lafayette.
Well, let me tell you, Uber really allowed me to pursue my dreams. Like, I was able to leave my job and just go drive Uber. So I drive Uber and Lyft, and I'll share with y'all. Last year, I made $60,000 driving Uber. So I say that to say, you know, that's really what really just keeps me up until we get the truck up and running and just, like, you know, getting to the point where I want to be. I was able to do everything else without having a regular job driving Uber.
And I can believe it because if it wasn't for Uber or Lyft, I would not have really made it in Nashville. And in Nashville, for real, like, you can see Uber and Lyft everywhere.
Everywhere.
Everywhere. Any type of day, any type of night. It really don't matter. You're going to find you for Uber or Lyft driver. And I have been for both.
Mm-hmm.
And many clubs, for those who be like, well, how do I sell it typically? You need a car. They don't take any car that's like past 10 years. I think you're cut.
They do
like,
now.
They do for real.
15. And on top of that, they kind of relax. Like every year, they relax it a little bit. But the other thing they do, I'm trying to think, what is it that you can rent a vehicle? You know, Uber used to have a program through exchange leasing, and I did that. Like, let me say, you don't have a car.
I thought about it. I just think
look, when you don't have a car, get on Lyft. Lyft got this great program with Hertz, and you can rent a vehicle through them.
And if you drive, do a certain amount of rides, you actually don't have like a car note.
Right. So it's $245 a week, just about. Right. That includes like the taxes. But it's so worth it because you don't pay for maintenance. You don't got to worry about miles. You could drive out of state. You could work in 40 different states on Lyft.
Exactly.
It was a plan that I was thinking about at one point in time.
It is amazing. Got to do what you got to do. If you don't know how to do stuff for yourself, you're in trouble when you're an entrepreneur. Because entrepreneurs is not paying folks until they get to that point, you know, when they don't have time.
You know, and that's something that we've talked about with a lot of other food truck owners as well, is like, until you get to that place where you are able to stabilize yourself, you got to be a forever student. You be like, okay, now what can I learn about this?
Right.
All right, man. This may have been the first time we've got a chance to link up, but this won't be the last time. So, I want you to know that whatever I can do to support your vision, yeah, I ain't got the money yet, but whatever other resources and talents that I can land to support you, I most definitely would do so.
I definitely appreciate it. I appreciate the opportunity. Honestly, you know, you kind of syndicated in your own right. You know, people talk about you all the time. By the way, when you posted, it was about catfish and grits. I cannot remember the food truck, but I think it was in Alabama.
It's Granny's Fish and Grits. Yeah.
Yes. When you posted that was the day I was watching that on TV, actually. I don't know if you knew that, but it was on, what's that guy's name? Andrew Zimmer.
Yeah.
Who goes around, and you know, he gives him the money or whatever.
Like that. Yeah.
Yeah. That day, like, I was literally watching that episode, and then I go online, and I see that you have posted about it, and I said, yeah, you doing your thing. So I just want to let you know that people even out this way and around are talking about, you know, this girl that goes around the food trucks. I'm like, oh, yeah, the food truck seller. So even though you don't have a truck, let me tell you, my food truck is the biggest. It's 27 feet long. That thing is like as long as an 18-wheeler, and I drove it by myself. But thankfully, I used to be a mail carrier. So, you know, I drove, look, in my latter days, and this was only 3 years ago, I was a mail carrier. And so I drove post office truck. I used to work for UPS. So, you know, I done been on the 2-ton, and I worked for FedEx. And so I have actually, all the way from a tug, you know, those tugs that they put the luggage on at the airport. I drove one of those, but it was as long as a city bus with freight on it. And I would pull up next to an airplane, okay? I had to park this thing next to an airplane. So you had to turn at the right moment. You had to back up at the right. If you scratched that airplane, it was $1 million. And that's how I learned how to drive different stuff. Like, nothing to do with cars, but all that experience really prepared me for that drive across from Florida all the way to Nashville. That was scary. It was times I had to stop just to breathe. I mean, I even parked it at a McDonald's, y'all. Like... Like, I don't even know where I was at, but I parked that food truck at a McDonald's and pulled up on him like it was just a car. They looked at me like, what is she doing? Eating, just like y'all.
You know, you bring this up at a good time because, you know, I just came back from Detroit. And I walked by and I saw Steve's World of Food. And that brother literally had an 18-wheeler. And I was like,
Man. That's what I envisioned. When I envisioned the food truck, I was like, I want an 18-wheeler. You can have people sit up on there, you know, like a little diner in the back or something. And a lot of people don't do that. But there are some that have the double-decker food trucks where you can eat up top and, like, they cook on the bottom.
Oh, I got to see
very,
it.
Very, very rare.
Oh, I got to see it. I got to see one. I got to go.
Yeah.
Leave it aside. It's like I got to
go. I'm telling you, on wheels.
I got to see it. Oh.
I'm gonna start finding your food trucks. Look, and since you check out this one. I don't know. I need to see a list of all the ones you've already been to.
I'm working on it. You know, it's only been a year. The food truck store has only been around for a year.
Really?
Yeah. So my 1 year anniversary was this month, June 6th.
Well, food truck style, you out there making waves. In it.
I appreciate you.
Only have been a year.
I appreciate you. So like June 6th, that was the day I sat on my couch and started drawing.
That's my birthday. That's my birthday. That's the lucky day. Lucky day.
And
June 6th.
And so you bring up that show with Andrew Zimmern. What happened was that I saw an article for it and a friend said like, oh, this is great. I said, no, like I need to be out here doing shows and stuff. So I'm like, okay, you know what? Forget waiting on this PhD to be done. We just going to start right where we at. So I just started drawing. And then I reached out to somebody I knew on Facebook, Spank Edwards, him and his mom, who of the BB Queen in Peoria. I reached out to him, had never met him before personally, drove up to Peoria, filmed that. I had no idea what I was doing, but thankfully there was somebody from Purdue who does film and, you know, we figured it out and then worked on that, worked on the logo and figuring out all the ins and outs. And then in August, I released that first episode. And then after that, I started doing Instagram live interviews, and the first one I did was Chef Sassy from The Great Food Truck Race, season 9. And so all of last fall, I was doing Instagram lives, and then because, you know, network issues and stuff like that, that's not always a stable thing. So I said, okay, I'm going to do podcasting. So I did my last I did my last Instagram live, I think back in January, and I bought the equipment. And I started in March. So the podcast itself is 3 months old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the podcast is fairly new. The Food Truck Scholar has been around for a year, like from the day that we bought domain names and stuff like that to now. It's been a year.
Well, we're trying to get our podcast stuff together. So I'm actually on a podcast out in D.C. called Beans Don't Burn on the Grill. So look out for that. I send you our first episode, but we did it in Virginia. So that was kind of interesting. Like, I actually flew down there and we cooked in Chefscapes, which is a dope kitchen. It's like one of those test kitchens. You can just go in there and test out products. You can go down the hall and actually cook like a commissary. That's another thing you should look into as well is Citizens Kitchen in Nashville. You know, it's like one of only about four kitchens in Nashville for people.
Ain't it off Charlotte?
So it's off of 46. And Charlotte, the first one.
Yeah, I've been there.
And then the other one that they just built is called Hunter Station. It's going to have a bunch of different restaurants up top. And then below, we're going to be operating below, like all the different, you know, food trucks and caterers and stuff. People that work out of farmers markets. So that one's called Hunter Station. But it's their second location. And then you have the platform, which I used to be a member of. You know, we've moved on. And then there's Costa Mesa, and I think that might be it. Like, the Beehive used to have a little bit of space where you can take on one or two people to, you know, use his kitchen with them. But that was about five kitchens pretty much in Nashville that were available for use. And, like, right now, the wait list is over 700 people long, so you can't even get a kitchen. So if you have a food truck, you can't even operate. That's one of the biggest challenges. Somebody needs to build another kitchen in Nashville, because if they do, they'll make their money back once. Probably in about a year or two. And then, you know, people can actually operate. You could just buy the wait list from the other kitchen.
Let's get you plugged in. How can people connect with you on social media and all your websites?
So you can find me at Chef Ray Cooks. That's CHEFRAECOOKS. Chef Ray Cooks or ChefRayCooks.com. You can also look at Beyond the Fork Food Truck on Instagram and Facebook, or Twitter at Beyond the Fork F1 is how they put it on Twitter. But if you just follow me at Chef Ray Cooks, it's in my bio, and my website is the same.
Perfect.
You know, my launch date and everything as well. We're kind of finalizing that now. So,
absolutely. Because, you know, we got to celebrate that.
Right. I'm excited. I mean, it's right there at that peak, you know. So, but it all came together. It all worked out in its due time. school's about to start, so it's perfect. I might even park it up at the school, to be honest, so I could watch it all day.
Well, look, I'm out of time, but I'm definitely not out of material. Once again, thank you for kicking it with me for another episode of the Food Truck Scholar Podcast. If you are a food truck owner that would like to be a guest or a listener that has suggestions for a food truck I should try, email me at Ariel, that's A-R-I-E-L, at thefoodtruckscholar.com. And make sure you follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter as The Food Truck Scholar to stay up to date on the latest in the food truck world. I'm your host, Ariel D. Smith, signing off and reminding you to eat local, buy local, and support your local food truck owners. I'll see you next week.